Bearing Witness, part of the Racial Reckoning Project, is a reflective dive into the week's events unfolding in this season of racial upheaval and, we hope, change. I'm Anthony Galloway, Executive Director of the Arts Us Center for the African Diaspora.
And I'm Georgia Fort, an independent journalist.
If now isn't a good time for the truth, I don't see when we'll get to it. Nikki Giovanni. A heads up as we begin our show today. We are going to be talking about the Jahlil Stallings case, and we will be engaging with some of the sound clips and the footage from that. And so a heads up to any who are listening that we will be going there. There's your trigger warning. As we have the conversations about how we continue to move towards justice, sometimes we have to pause and really look at what happened in a particular case, because narratives begin spinning around that go far beyond what the actual reporting on the ground tells us. So we're going to spend some time talking about the Jahlil Stallings case and how that ties in to this ongoing reckoning that's happening. And then get into some discussions just about, you know, how these encounters happen and what we can do to start changing some of these things. How can we start being different? How can we have a different narrative? This is Bearing Witness. So, Ms. Georgia, we are in a space, again, with seeing and having footage. You know, there's so many folks, I think Will Smith is being coined with saying it very often now, but so many people have said it before, that brutality is not just happening, just not now it's being filmed. We have yet another dose of insight that has come a lot from your coverage, at least in my area, where body cam footage and what's happening in the Jahlil Stallings case. So can you break this down for us a little bit and can it bring us up to speed with some of the important details that we should be thinking about and looking at over the Jahlil Stallings case?
Yeah, absolutely, Anthony. This footage that was released this week, it was used as evidence in a case against Jahlil Stallings. And in fact, it ended up helping his case because he ended up being acquitted. But usually footage like this can't be released while an investigation is open or while a trial is ongoing. And so now that that trial has ended, Jahlil was acquitted, we're all able to see for ourselves and we're able to make a determination on our own. And so if you have not seen the footage that was released showing Minneapolis police responding to protesters after George Floyd's murder, I do encourage you to go and look at it for yourself and make an assessment for yourself. But I had the chance also to speak with the attorney for Jahlil Stallings, who gave an excellent overview of just what happened to Jahlil Stallings last year when he was out trying to participate in protests for George Floyd. Take a listen at what he had to say.
Sure, and I'll try to summarize it from Jahlil's point of view, but he was out looking for protests on May 30th, 2020 in Minneapolis, and he was in a parking lot near 14th Avenue and Lake Street. He was with three other people in the parking lot waiting and trying to figure out where protest groups were, when a white van pulled past a building and shot at the group twice. One round hit Jahlil in the chest. Jahlil at the time had a legally carried firearm for his protection, and he fired toward but not hitting the van while getting into cover behind his truck. Once in cover, the people in the van stopped and started shouting, and that's when Jahlil learned that they were actually officers. So Jahlil put his weapon aside, laid on the ground, and waited for the officers to approach. When they did, they started striking and beating him. Jahlil remained surrendered and submissive, and he was ultimately arrested and charged with attempted murder for firing at the van.
So, you know, when you hear from his attorney and you also watch the footage, what you're able to determine is that Jahlil was a man who was outraged by the police violence that had happened, the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd. And so he was out with his community. He was looking for the protests. And it just so happened that this unmarked vehicle, and if you go back at that time, there were reports that there were white supremacists even who were driving around in unmarked vehicles, right? And so to have this car that is not a police vehicle direct fire at you and Jaleel was hit in his chest. And so immediately he actually thought that he had been hit by a real bullet. He thought he was bleeding out. And so his initial response, because he does have a permit to carry, was to return fire. No one was injured, but it incited this anger within the Minneapolis police officers who are on the receiving end of that. And in the footage, you can see these officers hop out. Jaleel, he gets on the ground and he's in full compliance. He was nowhere near his weapon anymore. And the officers just start beating him, punching him repeatedly, kicking him repeatedly, leaving him with a fracture near his eye, multiple bruises and cuts. And Anthony, when this footage was released last week, we saw the concern reignited about the Minneapolis Police Department. That same concern and fear that residents had immediately following the murder of George Floyd, it was reignited. And this is just weeks ahead of this big vote on the charter amendment for public safety. And so while we've seen so many community leaders galvanizing for voting yes, so many community leaders galvanizing for voting no, now this window into what MPD is really like when no one is watching, it has forced people to ask those tough questions. Is this a department that can truly keep everybody in our community safe?
I want to say to folks, as you suggested that folks go in view the video, you know, one of the things that we can assure folks, this video does not show death, the death of a Black man at the hands of police officers, but it does show brutality. And so just so folks know what they're going to view when they get to that video. You know, Georgia, your coverage, one of the things that I saw that you highlighted, that reigniting of this question of the history. You know, when you talk about the community leaders rallying both for and against, I was able to listen to some of the leaders who are rallying against the upcoming amendment the charter vote that's going to be happening in Minneapolis. And one of the things that they brought forward as well is this lack of understanding of the history of a thing. So we often get into these conversations about what should happen and not really pay attention to the history. We got to remember that the American Indian movement started on a case of police brutality by Minneapolis police, that this is cyclical. And it addresses long-standing issues and challenges around public safety and how public safety is "quote unquote" metered out by Minneapolis Police Department. So this goes back much bigger. In addition to the fact that some of the leaders who are rallying against are bringing up the fact that there were a whole lot of things that were brought up and attempted and denied, whether it was the subpoena authority of the Police Review Board or a few other things that had been in place and not done for long periods of time, which is causing distrust in this new initiative around public safety. At the same time, folks are saying, hey, things need to change now. And so we see this fracturing that's continuing to happen in the midst of this video dropping. What reaction, in the midst of all of this conversation, what have you seen? What are you seeing from community about in response to this video? Is it shifting the narrative one way or to another? Are you hearing more voices saying, well, now that this video is out, you know, it pushes me more towards wanting to vote for an Office of Public Safety rather than our current system? What are you seeing? Is this shifting narratives at all in your coverage?
Well, as a journalist, Anthony, I've been following both sides. I've been speaking to people in community who are saying vote yes, and I've been speaking to people in community who are saying vote no. What I will say is the people who were leaning more towards defunding the police, abolishing the police, who had these, what some people call radical views of what should happen with the future of public safety, some of those folks, it felt like, were losing momentum in recent months due to the fact that there had been so many children killed in North Minneapolis. And so it felt as though the argument for fully funding the police department and hiring, making sure that the police department was fully staffed, it was starting to feel as though those voices were getting louder and louder and also having more political support. So the politicians who represent Minneapolis and the wards that are most affected by gun violence all seem to be united on that front for the most part, with a few outliers. But it felt like there was more momentum in that direction until these videos surfaced. And there's something about the power of moving pictures that is just undeniable. And so when you see Jahlil Stallings on the ground, fully surrendered, not resisting arrest, and being beaten in a fashion similar to what we saw Rodney King beaten, you just cannot deny that is not necessary. That type of force is not necessary, and it is excessive. And so the argument of excessive force by police has been at the center of this conversation the entire time. And so it absolutely has reignited the momentum, the concern of those who have said all along that we should defund the police, that we should abolish the police, that we should really consider a different system of public safety that can serve everyone. Because here you have yet another example. And not only the Jahlil Stallings example, Anthony, but there was a batch of videos that was released. All of it, again, was evidence for the Jahlil Stallings case. But what we learned in some of the other videos that were released was that these officers who were out, Minneapolis police officers who were out responding to protests following the murder of George Floyd, we caught candid conversations of what their real attitude and their real desire was for their response to these protests. I want you guys to take a listen to this conversation. Two cops in a parking lot. Looks like they were trying to regroup, recalibrate. This is a candid conversation that they never thought would see the day of light. Listen to how they describe protesters.
Instead of chasing people around, we're going to hunt. You guys are out hunting people now, and it's just a nice change of tempo.
Yep, agreed.
Fuck these people.
Get to move on. Move forward.
So Georgia, in this footage, this candid conversation by police officers, this was used to defend Jahlil, correct?
Yes, this was used by his attorney, who we heard from earlier, attorney Eric Rice.
So, you know, this is part of the crux of this challenge, right? Because I do want to acknowledge that, unlike many other situations, we actually have a police chief, a black police chief, who was part of the lawsuit against the Minneapolis Police Department by black officers, who seems not only receptive, but, you know, we have the right, it seems like we have the right things in place to make some significant changes and address this particular culture, which I think is the crux of the issue. Folks try to make this argument around whether defund police or reform or whatever the space is about the need for police at all. And the actual conversation seems to me to be indicative of what this clip shows, and that is the culture of officers in so many of the police departments that we don't seem to be willing to address.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org.
You know, even the mayor of Minneapolis, who has said that he wants constituents to be able to vote for themselves, but feels like we need to keep our police department the way it is. Even he denounced this footage of Jaleel Stallings and the actions of these officers who are employed for MPD. And so at this point, many people were shocked and disturbed and outraged by the footage that showed the murder of George Floyd. And because they had not been seeing new incidences that were that severe or that damaging, it was easy for them to kind of go back to business as usual or backslide even on this conversation about changing public safety. And now with this footage, you cannot deny that, George Floyd was not an isolated incident. George Floyd was a situation that occurred out of a culture that had been created long before George Floyd was killed. I mean, Anthony, we've talked extensively about Jamar Clark and Justine Damon and so many others, right? And so with this footage, it absolutely reignites that urgency for change and equity that Black residents in Minneapolis are absolutely affirmed in their concern for their safety while living in the city of Minneapolis, because there is a public safety system that does not prioritize their care or well-being. And we've seen it time and time again. And this footage reiterates that notion. There was one other piece that really stood out to me, and this was hours of body cam footage that was released. But there was one other piece that stood out, and there were protesters who were out, with their hands up screaming at a line of officers saying, "We don't have guns. What are you doing?" Because the officers had their guns raised. And yes, they were only shooting rubber bullets, but we saw several protesters with very, very severe injuries from those rubber bullets. And so protesters they were screaming with their hands up, "Don't shoot." And, just saying like, "We have the right to be out here to use our voices." And out of nowhere, one of the officers just shoots a rubber bullet at these protesters who in that moment were not being violent, who were just using their voices. And a woman, it appears as though a woman is shot with the rubber bullet. And the officer's response is, "Ha ha, gotcha." And he gives a fist bump to one of his colleagues. And so when you hear officers speaking candidly amongst themselves and describing protesters in a way like, "We're going to hunt you down," and "Ha ha, gotcha." Anthony, where's the desire to protect and serve in that moment? Because I don't hear that. I don't hear compassion or empathy. I don't hear an attitude, a servant's attitude mentality there. And the one thing that really concerns me that's missing is integrity. Because when the cameras are there and there's a press conference and people are watching, you're going to be on your best behavior. But when you have no idea that anyone's around or anyone's listening, who you truly are comes out in that moment, right? Character is not who you are when everything's great and, the cameras are on you. Character is who you are when no one's watching. That's real integrity. Can you still be that great same person when no one's watching? And we're not seeing integrity in these officers.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, created and supported by Ampers, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org. This is precisely the moment where the not all cops mentality or mindset or conversation enters in to this type of dialogue, because we box ourselves into these false dichotomies and we can't seem to talk with nuance these days. And I'm trying not to be nihilistic about it, but it's a pattern that I'm seeing, is we have seemingly have the inability to do what you are suggesting that we do, and that is to hold ourselves accountable. So to see this evidence, to see something that backs up the times where I've been harassed by police officers and had their power supersede my rights as a citizen, or even the logic of the current situation. I remember being stopped over north in my Letterman's jacket, in my Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated Letterman's jacket, because they were looking for somebody who I'm overhearing in the description is nothing to look like me, but it was an opportunity to assert power. And so when you're walking down the street and I'm wearing red, let's be clear, I'm on 40th and Fremont, just wearing red, and folks on the block aren't even looking at my colors because they know enough to recognize that I'm wearing a collegiate Letterman's jacket. You know what the car rolling by said to me? My heart jumped into my throat because I realized that I was walking to my godmom's house and I'm in a situation where, you know what? I'm not in the right space to be wearing these colors right here. You know, and it's not something that's a huge thing, but it is a thing. It ran through my head. And then a car slow rolls by me and I'm like, shoot, I'm gonna have to deal with this. Because the block was hot at the time. And you know what they said out the car? They leaned out and said, hey, that's what's up. I'd like to see your brother get his education. He really recognized the Greek letters numerous jacket and gave me props, right? I'm getting juiced up, and I was walking tall. A block and a half away, I get stopped and have this encounter with the Minneapolis Police Department in my Letterman's jacket and dress slacks. So there's this policing state culture that about asserting power is a thing. And it's a thing that Black males have experienced, and not just Black males, but folks who are in over-policed communities have had this experience. We recognize this culture, and so we listen to the clip that was just played, and it confirms that. At the same time, the block is hot. Folks is dying. Folks want to see that there's something happens. Folks want something that's going to deter the behavior that has been going on, whether it's a result of a police quote unquote pullback or slow roll to calls, or the fact that this is that blocks are hot everywhere because we're in the middle of a pandemic and it's a hot mess and people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. Whatever the causation is, it's creating this space of fracturing that people aren't getting into a solution-based conversation. They're siloing into mechanisms that aren't producing policy change, and so it's going to the ballot box in Minneapolis. And right now, the way that the conversation is shaping up, it doesn't feel like there's going to be win no matter what the decision is made in Minneapolis. And so I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around, like, where do we go from here? How have you seen folks and leaders who are trying to take the nuanced approach to this make sense of this?
Well, a lot of people have asked, were any of those officers held accountable for their actions? Mm. And when I asked Jaleel Stallings, when I asked the attorney of Jaleel Stallings that question, he told me not to his knowledge. And I haven't seen any reports. And I would like to think that when Mayor Fry said that he denounced these actions, had anyone been held accountable, I'd like to think he'd throw that out there. But we haven't heard of cases where these officers have been held accountable for their misconduct. And so people who are trying to be nuanced and really, you know, understand both sides of this, no one can deny that there should be accountability.
Right.
That accountability for misconduct, whether you're for keeping MPD exactly the way it is, or whether you think that it should evolve into a public safety department, right? Like, regardless of where you are, you shouldn't be denying the need for accountability for misconduct. How can we have equity? How can we right. have safety without accountability?
That is an excellent point. That is an excellent point. And the evidence is there. It's clear. It's right there. That's something that you can point to and see, which is beneficial. And it's unfortunate to say it in this context, but we have the benefit of knowing what happened. Just like with George Floyd, we have the benefit of knowing exactly what happened. We could see it. There was no denying it. We still had to go through our processes. And to some extent, I'm also seeing folks in community who will say that the process worked in this case because at least that because Jahlil was acquitted, but not necessarily that it worked enough to hold accountability for the officer's role in excessive use. Are you seeing on the horizon that there may be an excessive use or civil case that comes out of the treatment of Jahlil?
I also asked his attorney, Eric Grice, that question. Mm-hmm. At this time, he didn't have an answer. He said they're still assessing the evidence for a civil case. They're still assessing the evidence for a lawsuit. I don't think he wanted to speak to that prematurely. At the moment, there isn't one. But he does have the right, if his attorney, if he decides, I do think potentially they could file the civil case. And I'm not even sure maybe if he would have grounds to file a criminal case for being assaulted, but also we should be asking ourselves, because you're talking about a man, Jahlil Stallings is a 29-year-old truck driver from St. Paul who had to sit in jail after being beat by the police. For something, for acting in self-defense. And then he had to hire an attorney and he had to go through trial and defend himself.
Right.
And so we should be asking ourselves, a man like that who was acquitted, what if that jury had not acquitted him? What if that jury would have said, no, we don't think that was self-defense. And he would have been sent to jail for attempted murder. And then when you look at that footage and you see for yourself, how was he supposed to know that they were police if they're shooting from an unmarked van? And so our criminal justice system is, it's very complex, yet very delicate. Mm. Right. And so it's just concerning when the thing that is at stake is someone's life and freedom, whether that means them being out on the street and being beat to death or having a knee on their neck until they can't breathe anymore, or whether that means a criminal justice system that takes away their freedom, right? And on the other side of that, when a person is innocent or they're denied due process, where's the accountability for those who are supposed to be upholding this system? Where's the accountability when they abuse their power or use excessive force? Or don't allow a person due process?
Well, we're going to end how we always do. So I'm going to kick it back over to you.
In the words of Dr. Joy Lewis, may the revolution be healing.
This has been Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, a part of the Racial Reckoning Project, The Arc of Justice, a journalism project created and supported by AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, KMLJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.